The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Man in Line's on through till 1 this afternoon. We're open line, so the floor is yours. Whatever subject you want to talk about, call 66 13 68. Text 166 177. WhatsApp 166 177. Or email studio at manxradio.com. Well, it is Manx Grand Prix, Classic TT. I think the programmes... Does everybody know where the programmes are? Good. Gary Thompson and his team are in the midst of final preparations. Starts on Sunday, of course. What's more, he and other race officials have more time. It's an expanded 12-day schedule from the 17th to the 29th of August for both meetings. Gary Thompson described last year's weather as hellish. Of course, heavy disruption. Of course, it was contracted, so it was constricted. So really, it was a bit, wasn't it? So what about the new format? I wonder what your thoughts are on the new format of this, and what other matters are outstanding before the first flag drops. Well, it's happening on Sunday, so let's hear what Gary Thompson has to say about final preparations.
We are currently slightly short of marshals, still for Sunday, and I would like to say to anybody locally, if you haven't signed on yet, then please do so. From the clerk of the course's point of view, we do need to get Sunday afternoon in and Monday and Tuesday, but more so Sunday afternoon, because here we've got a natural reduction in light compared to what we have at the TT event in May. At the Manx Grand Prix Classic TT, we have to flag all at 8 o'clock during qualifying week, so we automatically lose almost an hour's worth of qualifying practice. The newcomers as well, we've got about 34-35 newcomers. We get the newcomers lap done on Sunday, it just sets us up nicely then for the rest of the week.
There seems to be a bit of confusion from some people as to there are 5 weeks of works scheduled to take place on a section of the mountain road. Explain a bit why these works are going to be taking place after a racing event rather than before.
My understanding is obviously that this work was due to take place before the TT, and there was an issue with the equipment available. We then had obviously the issue with Brandywell before the TT, which we've now got squared away, and it's been revisited since the TT's finished. So Brandywell's squared away. We've recently just had two burst water mains, one at Appledean and one on the approach to Douglas Road Corner, again squared away. Following the inoperability of the machines needed before the TT, it was agreed with the DOI that the work needed to be done from a race organiser's point of view would be done after the Manx Grand Prix stroke Classic TT.
One thing that came up from the shorter format, sometimes it was very long days, very tiring days for the likes of not just marshals but the likes of the scrutineers, for example. How much do you hope an expanded schedule will benefit the likes of marshals and scrutineers so they don't maybe feel used and abused?
I mean, I certainly hope nobody feels used and abused, and for everybody, whether it's competitors, teams, those of us in race control, the marshals out on the course. There have been some long days, and I try to make the decisions as early as we possibly can so that people don't go standing out on point for hours waiting for the decision to be made. And equally, same with the scrutineers. We utilise the contingency sessions carefully.
So, any thoughts on this? You heard Gary Thompson, what he's had to say. And if you are a marshal, I do hope you're all signed up and ready to go. Fingers crossed anyway. Let's hope for a safe couple of weeks for the MGP and also for the Classic TT. Any thoughts on the matter? By all means, do get in touch. And some questions. Actually, I'm just getting some questions to when Claire Christian was in. And it was regarding the ambulance depot and the movement of the ambulance depot, and also transferring patient transfer. It was a lady who asked me about what's happening to the ambulance depot. Well, the minister's most recent update, they say, remains valid, is that £125,000 is available to develop the project, moving the ambulance depot. In terms of project, terms of design and feasibility, the information's available on page 81 of the Pink Book, which provides the following explanation. The following schemes have received funding support to enable the departments to formulate fully scoped and costed business cases that can be then considered for full project budget allocation within the quarterly approval process. The design and feasibility studies and activities are financed through bids to the Project Development Fund. Do you understand that? Right. Ongoing, shall we say, for moving the ambulance depot at the back, currently at the back of the old Nobles Hospital. And the patient transfer work remains ongoing to deliver the transfer, with the DHSC, DOI and Manx Care committed to a smooth transition. So at the moment it's DHSC, it's moving to Manx Care. So thank you for that. Thanks for that question. Sorry we didn't get any answer straight away on the day. And also some questions regarding, do you remember a few days ago there was that report about Mr. Watson who'd visited Japan and the Manx issued international driving permit, he said was a bit like Blue Peter. It was a kind of bit of card with some laminators over it. He said they simply wouldn't allow him to hire a vehicle in Japan, didn't really recognise it. He wanted to hire a car from Europe Car despite having all the paperwork ready. He was refused the vehicle due to the staff in Okinawa not being familiar with the Isle of Man. Japan not knowing where the Isle of Man is. Well, with Honda. Anyway, he showed the officials and police through the Geneva Convention guidance and still wasn't enough. Anybody else had that sort of problem? Is your Manx International Driving Permit working fine? Is that the way it should be? And follow-up to the mention about the internet being slow or being intermittent, there's a note in from Derek who just said, we've had fibre with Manx Telecom for over 2 years, but still we get erratic signal. So I kept running the speed checker. And we get 98 megabits per second, which is what we pay for. But I saw some of the VPN providers like NordVPN and Surfshark include antivirus with their offer. So not only is it you banking info and personal information better protected with a virtual private network for £40 a year for a VPN, you get antivirus protection for 5 devices. But the best thing is that you get your VPN location to London or Manchester, so you can still get BBC and ITV. Incredibly, when you were on the speed checker again, the megabits per second doubles to 200 megabits per second. It was faster than Manx Telecom alone, and everything is way faster, even though your router and fibre is Manx Telecom. It's worth it, says Derek. And that's a tip if you're looking for fast internet. Many more questions to get to, which I'll get to in just a few moments' time. Oh, by the way, we just had the 2 minute silence for VJ Day. Did everybody stop? Chris in Port Erin Pet said we'd close the door. But there were still people wandering around during the 2 minute silence. Was it observed where you were? Here's Mark with us now. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Andy. I just wanted to, I've been doing a bit of work in the Orkney Islands straight after the Island Games in terms of shipping in Armistone. And I was talking to the cruise terminal up there, and I just asked them, I said, so how often are cruise ships coming to the Orkney Islands? And it's basically one every other day, from the 1st of April until the 31st of October. And it got me thinking again about the cruise strategy on the Isle of Man, and just how, you know, we're hindered because we don't have a deep water berth. There were some studies done by KPMG, which we partnered with the Isle of Man government to try and get. And basically, 5-6 years ago, the deep water berth would pay for itself in 25 years. But I remember at the time, the DOI were scaremongering, saying, oh, it's like having a massive big aircraft carrier in the port. We can't possibly do that. And then we met up with the Department of Enterprise, and they said, oh, what can we possibly do with 2,500 cruise passengers coming on the island every day? And that's exactly what the Minister of the Department of Enterprise said 5-6 years ago. And our jaws dropped. So it's just, again, just trying to put it back into the frame. You know, this deep water, and the government's trying to throw money, 80 million, I think they got signed off for the existing inner harbour. And something needs to be done, you know, because, you know, I spent a lot of time in Liverpool, their cruise industry's thriving. Dublin, the cruise industry's thriving. I don't even remember, we flew over the head of Dublin Cruise, we flew over the head of Liverpool Cruise, we flew over the head of Orkney Islands Cruise to try and gain some momentum. Obviously, COVID hit and that wiped everything out.
Yeah.
But Liverpool and Dublin all want us to have a thriving cruise industry because it adds to the Irish Sea story, which means basically the cruise ships can slow steam, come in and then go out again. So you can basically get more of a package than the Irish Sea. And no one's talking about it. I don't know if Michelle Hayward and Tim Johnson, the expert in tourism, can get together and try and figure things out, but they're probably in their own little camps and they can't do anything. But it beggars belief. And of course, people say they don't spend enough money. Well, if Liverpool are investing a lot of money and Dublin are investing a lot of money and the Orkney Islands are investing a lot of money, what do they know that our Isle of Man government civil servants don't? It's a no-brainer,
right?
But it just requires a bit of vision. I don't know what your thoughts are, Andy.
Two questions, really, and that is yeah. I mean, what do 2,500 people do in Orkney all day long? I mean,
that's 2,500. We calculated, obviously, the larger cruise ships are about 2,500 people.
Right.
5,000, I'm not sure we'll get in. But it was 2,500 tourists coming to the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
And the Department of Enterprise said, what can we possibly do with 2,500 tourists?
Right.
That was a meeting we had, and that's exactly what they said.
Okay.
Where
would you put the port? Where would you tie up? Because at the moment, they obviously have to go into the middle of Douglas Bay and tendered off.
Yeah, so there was a lot of studies done, and we talked to the Department of Infrastructure, the outside of Victoria. So it's another, you know where the lighthouse is? It sort of goes out perpendicular to there.
Right.
And that's where we could put the cruise terminal. And there was just a lack of general desire to move forward with it. And I think they talked to the local harbour master and said, no, we'll just meddle around with the inner harbour. So we're just missing out on a huge opportunity, Andy. You know, cruise industry's back. COVID's, you know, in the rearview mirror now. And you know, if we can get, I mean, we could basically quadruple the amount of cruise tourists we could have to the Isle of Man, and it's a taster. You know, if 5% of the cruise tourists that come to the Isle of Man think, oh, this is a nice place, they might come back as well. So, you know, they get them down Strand Street, get them on those horse trams, get them on the steam trains. It's just requires a bit of vision. And, you know, no one's talking about it again because it's probably, oh, it's a bit too difficult.
Who drove it last time, Mark? Where did the idea come from last time?
So basically, it was the Shipping Association, which was now Isle of Man Maritime previously. They drove the initiative to try and stimulate the economy. There was a lot back then. There was a lot of objection from the steam packet because the steam packet was thinking, "Oh, if we've got a larger berth, therefore we may have competition." But now the Isle of Man government owned the steam packet, so that negates that whole issue now. You know, because obviously you do need a monopoly on the steam packet to guarantee the full year round. So that sort of objection's gone now. So there's no real reason why the government can't start looking at it again. They'll be fully supported by Liverpool and Dublin. For them, it just adds to the Irish Sea story, you know. When I was talking to the Orkney Islands, I was thinking, flipping out, they've got a cruise ship in every other day. And at the moment, we're limited because we have to tender. And cruise ships don't like to tender,
right?
Because passengers don't like to tender. But if you can come alongside on the berth, there's a huge opportunity for the Isle of Man.
Right. Just explain again. The Victoria Pier is the one, it's the outside one, isn't it, that leads straight to the sea terminal?
Correct. That's the outside one. And the large, it can be changed, but as then there was another, the larger pier would be on the outer side of the current outer harbour. And that's where the initial plan, the last plan that we did with Royal Haskoning, we paid for it. You know, the government didn't pay for it to try and encourage them. But, you know, a proper evaluation needs to be done. And, you know, not with a local harbour master. Get a proper Royal Haskoning or people who've done this before, and they'll be able to tell you where they can do it, how much it will cost. And the payback, I mean, 6 years ago, the payback was 25 years. I can't remember what the cost was. God, it's 6-7 years ago.
Right.
But the payback was 25 years. But for a large infrastructure project like that, fantastic. And of course, people
were talking about tens of millions or hundreds of millions to build it.
Oh, it was tens back then. Well, obviously, you've got the Liverpool landing station. Everybody's not very confident about what the government can deliver. But I would just, I wouldn't leave the decision making in the hands or the negotiation in the hands of the civil servants. You can get a Royal Haskinian or consultant to guide you with regards to what the costs were.
Right.
I think it was 45, 50 million back then. Sounds like a lot of money, but it's paid back in 25 years with the increase in tourism. I think now you're, let's say, double it probably because of inflation. But again, you know, inflation, people will be spending more with the increase as well. So yeah. I don't know. It's just something we were very passionate about at the time. It just seemed to have gone dead.
I'm trying to remember the chief officer, the chief exec of when it was the tourism ministry, Mr. Toohey, Terry Toohey, years and years ago, was very pro cruisers. Yeah. When David Cretney was the minister, yes, and Mr. Toohey was the chief exec. I remember he talked very glowingly about Dublin's cruise industry.
I remember talking to Terry when we sort of tried to revitalise the whole discussion, and Terry was delighted and because he, as you say, very, very passionate about it, because it would, you know, it'd be so nice to see more tourists over here. I think everybody likes to see tourists using the trams and trains and going down Strand Street. It's just, it needs to be kick-started again, the whole discussion.
Okay. And why isn't Visit Isle of Man talking about this?
That's a really good question. I suppose Visit Isle of Man probably sits under the Department of Enterprise, I would imagine. And the port development is the Department of Infrastructure. So it probably means two departments trying to communicate to each other, which on a track record basis, they don't seem to like to do that. So you probably need to have a sort of a separate body saying, okay, we need to do something with the port. The Victoria Pier is needs money spending on it because it's very old. What else can we do? Right. What else can we do to revitalize it and get the DOI and the Department of Enterprise to set up a separate, group to focus on that.
And just to reiterate, Mark, it's from the 1st of April to the 31st of October. Orkney has a cruise line every other day.
Every other day. And I knew it was a lot, but I thought, because I remember, do you remember we flew the head of Orkney over? And I think he actually came on Manx Radio. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and Dublin and Liverpool, and there was the real sort of momentum. I just think we need to look at it again.
Okay.
All right.
Appreciate it. All right. Thanks for calling today, Mark. Good to hear from
you. Cheers, Andy. Take care.
26 minutes past 12. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. I seem to remember the deep water port of Port St Mary was once mentioned about cruise ships being able to come straight in.
At the time they were talking about marinas, and it was before the Peel Marina was built, that it was mooted that, I mean, the only 24-hour port is Port St Mary. And at the time, I think whoever was in charge, maybe it was local politicians or national politicians, said they didn't want the traffic in Port St Mary, so no thank you.
Well, it'd be an incentive to get the high street fixed up, wouldn't it, I suppose?
Yes, possibly.
Just staying on a nautical theme after Mark, just a couple of repercussions from the conversation we had yesterday about the Moore Vanin wind farm. Ørsted says that the sea area will be around 90 square miles or 223 square kilometres, which is getting on for half the size of the Isle of Man, and it's kind of a vertical rectangular shape. Mezeron ships, they go to Belfast, but they also sail from Ramsey to Glasson Docks in Lancashire. So if they've got to go around the Moore Vanin wind farm, that would likely add somewhere around about 10 extra nautical miles per leg. So you've got 20 extra nautical miles every return trip, which is going to add about 3.5 hours daily. So per ship per day, that's an extra, across the year, 7,260 nautical miles if you take off Christmas, New Year, whatever, which is the distance from here to Indonesia. So that's going to add 605 extra sailing hours per ship and an extra 136,000 litres of diesel a year. And I thought that we were supposed to be saving on the footprint of emissions.
Well, I'm assuming they've spoken. I'm trying to think who. I think it's Dola, the German company in Fort Anne. I think they own Mazarin nowadays. Maybe they've been spoken to.
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm working at the extra cost to Mazarin each year. So you've got extra fuel, you've got crew and operating costs, and then you've got the extra maintenance schedule on that extra 7,260 miles. So that's going to add an additional, on top of their existing costs, £1.25 million a year per ship. So no doubt that would be added to the goods that we will have coming in. And not forgetting that Mazarin recently replaced their Silver River ship with the Snaefell River. And then another thing to think about, Wilf has mentioned that Mor Vanin would be sited on Bahama Bank, which is an important fishing area. So this wind farm not only would likely ban our fishing fleet from that 223,000 square kilometre zone, but then you've got the foundation pile driving of 87 turbines that are going to damage or destroy the existing fish habitats and spawning grounds. Yeah. But it also permanently changed the sea currents, the sediment patterns. So effectively, Ørsted are offering us a quarter of the seabed lease that they would have to offer the Crown Estate if they were just over our territorial waters. And it's also going to affect it. I can't see that it can be avoided. Our shipping and fishing industry.
Well, these things are. I mean, the thing is, these things could be the biggest turbines in the world. I mean, it's nice to have a first, but I mean, these things are 1,000 feet high.
1,200 actually.
Is it?
350 meters. It's over 1,200. So you're kind of eye level with the mountain road above, looking down on Ramsey.
Right.
And
as you say,
point.
I mean, when they're pile driving that stuff into the seabed, around Bahama Bank is a very rich fishing ground. So that's, I mean, presumably it's not going to cheer the fish up much, is it?
Well, yeah. Talking of pile driving and sediments, there's just a new peer-reviewed study that's just been published in the latest edition of Marine Pollution Bulletin, and it's titled "Chemical Emissions from Offshore Wind Farms." The study points to 228 chemicals involved in leaching from the foundations. We're not even talking about microplastics off the blades. And this is the anti-fouling coatings. You've got the large sacrificial galvanic anodes. And then you've got the other corrosion protection systems that have been measured in the water column and the sediment in high concentrations around these turbines. And this, is, of course, the toxic buildup for benthic habitat. So it's not just fish, but you've got the bottom-dwelling species like shellfish and crustaceans. So is that going to affect scallops and, you know, all these stuff that we take for granted in our... And that's not even including infrasound that's been implicated in all these beachings of whales.
Somebody, Texter 200, said, Julian, are you going to the Ørsted review on the 26th of August at Laxey?
Yep, you bet. I'm going to have a Well, you've got to participate in these things, and I think this is really important. And, you know, 87 times... half the height of the mountain. I mean, you know, bye-bye to that lovely view that we enjoy at the moment. I mean, some people might say, oh, well, it doesn't matter, but all these things have to be thought about. If you're going to destroy part of our shipping industry or make it very expensive, and then you've got the fishing industry as well, you know, got to participate in this, I think.
Okay. All right, Julian, have a good weekend. Thanks for calling today.
You too, Andy. Thanks.
29 minutes before, I got a note in from Anne-Marie and just said, I'm very concerned about our work permit system. Is the work permit system open to abuse? Well, Anne-Marie, every year the Department for Enterprise carries out, well, they say 200 visits, so that's four visits a week to employers to ensure that the rules on hiring non-Manx workers are being followed through. However, one MHK reckons it doesn't go far enough. That MHK is the Onchan MHK Dually Edge.
Someone coming to the Isle of Man from the Common Travel Area, so that's from the UK or Ireland or from the Channel Islands, if they come to work on the Isle of Man, yes, they need to have a work permit. If someone's coming in from elsewhere, then they need to go through the immigration process and have a confirmation of employment from an employer. There's strict processes. As far as the work permit system is concerned, you know, we do have officers. Their full-time role is to go around checking businesses, making sure that things are being done properly, and assessing situations. And if clearly there's a breach, then that is addressed. Often those breaches are very minor and not intentional, and they can be sorted out very quickly. Sometimes it's more serious, in which case it's referred to the Attorney General's office for potential prosecution. But ultimately, in the common travel area, people can come to the Isle of Man, and you know, someone can move here tomorrow and buy a house and live here. They wouldn't be able to claim benefits or anything like that, but they could come and live here. And if they want to work, they need to have a work permit. If they start working without it, then clearly that's an issue.
Well, you noticed that was actually the minister, the enterprise minister, Tim Johnston, MHA. This is Julie Edge.
I am concerned, as many of the public come into me, really concerned, how are these people all here? Who's checking their work permits? Who's checking they're valid in the roles that they're in? And when you look at, you know, there's been a lot of concern raised with regards to exploitation in visas. Well, could there be exploitation in work permits also? Because if they're not getting checked that the individual's still working, a work permit is for the place that you're working in. If nobody's doing that check and due diligence, it's open to possibly to abuse. The minister said they do 200 planned checks, but out of how many work permits that are currently circulating, he didn't have that answer, and I think that's a real significant question that needs answered. What my main concern is that everybody that's arriving on the island is bona fide to be in the workplace, because I'm aware of a lot of our own young people that are going for jobs, don't even get an answer and don't get a job, but there's possibly, you know, work permits or visas being handed out because of all these routes of opportunity to come in.
I wonder what your thoughts are regarding this. It's a hot topic at the moment. Everybody knows. People are talking about this, and Enterprise, they say, carry out 200 visits to employers every year. Any thoughts on this? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Captain Carter's with us now. Hello, Captain Carter.
Andy, good afternoon. Just following up on Mark's comments about the cruise industry.
Yeah.
It is. I agree entirely that anything that we can do to improve the number of cruise ships we get is beneficial to the Isle of Man. However, the proposal to build a deep water pier on the seaward side of the Douglas Breakwater, basically running out from Douglas Head Lighthouse and Port Skillion, was in some respects all right, but it had some very difficult navigational problems putting a ship on it. And very basically, when you build a berth for a cruise liner, and the Victoria Pier is out of the question because it's not deep enough at the inner end, you've only got about 4 metres of water at the inner end.
So we're talking about the Battery Pier, the Princess Alexandra Stabbits around there.
The Princess Alexandra Pier, yes. So seaward of the Stabbits, so there would be a berth between the Stabbits and the new pier. That was what the plan was. There was a select committee of Tynwald looking into it, and various people who were well-versed in bringing large ships in and out of Douglas Harbour raised concerns, because the problem was that the pier was going to be at right angles to the tidal stream which ran across the end and round Douglas Head. And in a confined berth like that, that would make berthing large ships extremely difficult in the wrong tidal and weather conditions. And the difficulty with that was that what you should try and do, of course, is if you look at the Victoria Pier as a classic example, the Victorians knew what they were doing. The tidal stream runs up and down parallel with the pier, but you'd be coming into this new berth, the tidal stream would be running at right angles, either when it was flooding or when it was ebbing, which would make docking large ships in there quite difficult in certain conditions. Now, because of these questions which were raised by me and by several other ex-captains of the steam packet and people like that who have spent their lives bringing ships in and out of Douglas Harbour, the Harbours Division commissioned a simulator at Fleetwood Nautical College to to simulate the tidal conditions and the new pier and everything else. And they had an experienced retired pilot from Southampton who was used to bringing in the biggest cruise liners in the world at the time, a ferry captain and one or two others, went to Fleetwood to have a go on this simulator. And basically the conclusion backed up the views of the local mariners that it would be an extremely difficult berth to put a ship on in anything other than virtually slack water or and not too much wind either from certain directions,
right,
which would make it and in fact the pilot from Southampton said his view was, I think, that any cruise liner captain looking at it wouldn't want to put his ship in there. So it wasn't that people didn't want another cruise berth to improve it, and it was basically that it was a sort of a design that was looked at, and when you look at it, it looks like a good place to do it. But because of the way that the tide runs, it actually made it, without getting into difficulty, right, into detail, it made it very, very difficult to try and berth a ship on there,
right,
without the use of some very, very powerful tugboats.
Okay.
And, of course, what are those tugboats going to do for the rest of the time? In Liverpool, in Dublin, in the Orkneys, they have them there for the oil terminals, all run by the corporation, very big, powerful tugboats to assist the ships when required. But you would end up having them here, sitting around with nothing else for them to do.
In the back of my mind, Stephen, I've got the idea. Did anybody propose Port Jack, building something at Port Jack, or am I imagining that?
I don't recall anybody proposing it. I mean, there have been various proposals. There was a proposal to rebuild the breakwater in Port Erin, so you could land on the outside of it.
Right.
But the prevailing wind is southwesterly, and it's very exposed. The berth in Stornoway is pretty sheltered. The berth in Liverpool and the river is pretty sheltered. The berth in Dublin is pretty sheltered. But they all have, so they're in the situation where the tidal conditions are more amenable to berthing the ships on them.
Right.
In Liverpool, of course, the tide, even though it's very strong, runs parallel to the berth, up and down the berth, not at right angles to it.
Okay.
And that's the critical thing.
Any hope for the Queen's Pier then, Stephen?
Yes, you could. If they completed the Queen's Pier out to the end and they dredged Ramsey Bay out about as far as the Bahama Bank to get enough depth of water.
Right.
It's too shallow by miles.
Oh, is it? Right?
you've only got about 3 metres of water on the end of the Queen's Pier at low water. Maybe slightly more than that, but not a lot. And to build something you can berth big cruise lines on, it's the depth of water, because obviously the bigger the ship, the more they draw, and even though they're not drawing the same as super tankers, lots of the cruise liners that we get in, the bigger ones, are drawing 7 metres, 7.5 metres, and as I say, on the Victoria Pier, you could get a 200 and probably get a, say, a 200, 220 metre ship on the Victoria Pier at high water, but on those sort of drafts, he would be aground forward at low water, which, of course, isn't acceptable to the ship, you see.
Do you see any solution to this, Stephen?
Well, not without a huge expense. And I seem to remember at the time the figure that was being bandied about was £18 million or something to build it. I think that might have included the fact that you'd have to build a new road either up Douglas Head or widen the Battery Pier Approach Road, where you've got all the oil and gas installations, because it's not only a question of getting the ships tied up, you've then got to be able to get the coaches to pick the passengers up to take them somewhere, haven't you? So I think that, to be fair to the Isle of Man and to the people who organise the cruise liners on the Isle of Man, they're doing a very good job, and we've done very well this summer for cruise liners, and they are working with what is available, and as I say, we're stretching the limits of the ships. The cruise liners used to come in, used to be no more than about 130 metres. Now we're bringing 160 metre cruise liners in onto the Victoria Pier. So you are pushing it, but it is whether long term, that the cost of the infrastructure, and you know, you've got to say, if it was £80 million, it cost over £80 million already to convert an existing lock in Liverpool into a ferry terminal. So you think how much it would cost to build a new pier and all the road infrastructure and everything else, except course, it might include putting the horse tramps to the sea terminal, which would be beneficial.
As always, Captain Carter, appreciate your industry knowledge and your wisdom on this. Thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, it's 18 minutes to one.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through, great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows.
Whether starting a new business or building up your existing business, come and talk to the accounts and tax experts at Nicola Bowker & Co. With their holistic approach to business advice, Nicola Bowker & Co. will work with you to achieve success. For accounts that work, call 861-271.
Corkill. Call Corkill Removals and Storage today. Loads big and small, day after day. We'll help you move, we'll help you pack. Whether local or global, we've got the knack. So give us a cheer.
Yay!
Your movers are here.
They do it right.
As well as moving locally, nationally or internationally, we have storage solutions from as little as £12 per week. Call
675-495. We'll get your load delivered on time. You can be sure we'll get the job done. Click corkillremovals.com.
Hi, this is Chris Pearson. As we mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, you've another chance to hear the Burma-Star veteran and island resident James Fenton talking about his time in the jungles of Borneo in the 1940s.
Because the Japanese were raising hell, weren't they, out there? And we knew that we were going to have to tackle them. We didn't know what part of the area in the Pacific we were going to.
James, who's now 103 years old, remembers his time with the 14th Army, aka the Forgotten Army, in a Manx Radio special, first broadcast back in 2023.
But the Japanese always used to shell us through the day, but not as much as they did at night.
Here, James Fenton, this evening at 6, and available as a podcast afterwards at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Quarter to one, Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
It's Peter Murcott here. Wanted just to make a little comment about this meeting that's taken place between Trump and Putin. It's very, very ill-considered, I think. And I don't think I'm the only one of that. You see, we've got a precedent, a historical precedent, 1938, Czechoslovakia was discussed behind their back, and the decision was reached, and we know what exactly happened there. And interestingly, I've got Churchill's speech that he made in 1938, which was prophetic as to what was going to happen after they'd really carved up Czechoslovakia without the Czechs being involved in it. And then after the Second World War, one of the American presidents, Roosevelt, or when the war was coming to an end, he met up with Stalin. And he met at a time when, of course, Churchill wasn't present. And, of course, Roosevelt was no match for Stalin. And, of course, we all know the disasters that happened after the Second World War when Stalin effectively dominated large parts of Europe. And so we've got a situation now, and I was reading this morning that I don't believe everything I read in the press, and I don't take information from what I read there, but evidently Trump's going to rely on Russian translators. And as was pointed out in what I was reading, if that is so, language has little nuances. A translator who's going to be the Russian translator is not going to bring those nuances out. If he had his own translator, they might well come out and he might realise what exactly Putin was saying. So I think whichever way you look at it, I think it's a very bad idea. And I think it's, to put it extraordinarily mildly, it is very disrespectful to Vladimir Zelensky for someone else to talk about the future of his country, in effect, without him being there. And I'm so glad that at least some of the Western nations have spoken out as loudly as they can.
I wonder what's going to happen. What's your opinion of the long-term outlook for all this?
I think, given the situation, I think Putin will have the advantage and he will probably manipulate things round. I don't think Trump's up to it. I think he's making some silly mistakes. I think he overrates himself as what he can do, and that's always very dangerous for anybody. He needs lots of advisers and he needs to take advice. And I get the impression he doesn't take advice. He trusts his own feelings. And feelings are deceiving. You do need advice. So, yeah, I think the outcome will be very worrying for the West. And I think the outcome will be very beneficial to someone who's actually marched into somebody else's country.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling today, Peter.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There's a lot of criticism of Manx Care's bureaucracy, but I've got great respect for the ambulance service, says 882. Only a few ambulances, but even in TT, they don't import ambulance services from over in Liverpool, places like that. So it's very efficient. And also, I've just heard that work permit comment not needed for many professions, i.e. nurses and doctors. And David's with us on Man in Line. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy. Just can I talk about the Moore Vannon site and the benefits that really would come to the Isle of Man, as far as I can see at the minute, with limited information. I will be attending the meeting down at in Garth there. And don't forget, Garth now, quite a lot of people live in Onchan and Garth at the same time, so we have a bit of a split there. And I hope they don't forget about the people that's living in the lakeside down there, that way out towards Groudle. And don't forget that where their potential landing site is for the power cable to bring them back to onshore so we can get some benefit of it is actually down at Groudle Beach. That was the latest one I'd seen anyway down there. And the other benefit we can get out of it too as a community is, and look ahead, I always try and look ahead, is what we get that's for community gain where these things happen. And I would welcome them. I see them out at sea there, and they're a novelty when you get on the steam packet boats. Everybody gets up and looks at them, and then when you come again or you're coming back, you don't even bother, do you? You're not off to sleep and get back to the island. So, and the other one I was going to criticise a little bit too, and it's the Grodno DEFA department and the DEFA minister there, is the scheme that's finishing now, but then there's a new scheme coming forward. Don't we need the scheme to be out before the winter starts? And we get away from the giving you free light bulbs and a few rolls of insulation. Mm. We want some modern technology. And just for my listeners there, I'm producing 3.7 kilowatts. I've just got my electricity bill and I can't believe it. Guess how much it is?
Go on.
£27.
My
and
word.
I've paid it.
Electrifying.
I even got a discount on that as well. But I remember too, and I know Carter was talking about Port Erin and Port St Mary.
Yeah.
The politicians down south killed that. Port Erin was going to be basically there was money available for what we call ribs vessels to be stored and a small business down there to maintain, because the yachting industry or the yachts that are around the island there. And I don't know what's happened with Ramsey now. Nobody seems to be taking the cudgel anymore about the marina up at Ramsey. Well, maybe Wilf will give us an update next week, see how it's going on and how the wall's getting built. All right.
Good to hear from you. Have a good weekend.
See you later.
Thanks. That's 8 minutes before one. Andy, this is 667 says, Andy, are the two Garth MHKs in favour of the proposed offshore wind farm? Well, yeah, they'll probably be at that meeting on the 27th, so you can ask them. VPN, says Phil, most are Russian, American or Chinese. Your own information is only as safe as whether you trust the government not to obtain details from these VPN tunnels. Fishing areas could be affected by wind farms, says Big John. I would think the government would change the location for the fishing or shipping routes to move to accommodate the wind farms. So I... and also, I'm writing about the electricity and producing and savings of my investment of over £20,000 over 3 years for PV solar panels and batteries and electric panel heaters to replace water-filled radiators. So far this year, I've spent a net £28 on electricity through the credits from the MUA and not as yet enjoying the cheap tariff for electricity during the night, which would top up my batteries. Mainly due to my age of 80, I've never thought of the ROI, return on investment, and always focus on cheaper electricity that I produce when prices will no doubt rise over the next 10 plus years. My savings on expenditure are so far £6,336, and I use my dishwasher, clothes washer, free of charge when the sun's producing electricity. The installation cost is expensive, but I would do the same again. For younger people, the return on investment close comes into play when making it is a real no-brainer. Photovoltaic panels are a must.
This is the Isle of Man talking. The man in line.
Have you been into H&H Motorcycles or been to hnhmotorcycles.im? There is everything you need from clothing and accessories to service, repairs and tyres. Stocking the full range of RST, Race FX Enduro and motocross clothing, plus Oakley sunglasses and goggles and casual clothing. H&H are the island's Arai, Bell and AGV helmet, motor oils and quad lock distributor. Call in at South Quay Industrial Estate Douglas for a browse, coffee and a chat, or shop online with home delivery.
Above deck or below, Harbour Marine Services has all your boating needs in one place. From engine sales and servicing to charts, books, dinghies and trailers, electronics, navigation, ropes, rigging and safety. Over 2,000 square feet of stock to help you stay safe on the water. Call 822-995 or find us on Facebook. For all your chandlery supplies, set your course to Harbour Marine Services next to Castle Down Harbour.
Cybersecurity is important for any business, no matter what the size. Protecting both you and your client's data dramatically reduces the risk of a cyber attack. Luckily, it doesn't have to be expensive. At JTG, we're island-based and tailor our approach to cybersecurity on your needs. Protection can be as little as the cost of a coffee a week. Click jtg.im and get your free business health check today. Keep you and your business safe with cybersecurity from JTG.
I began to struggle with the stairs, but I didn't want to leave our family home. So my daughter told me about Acorn Stairlifts and their new showroom in Douglas. I was able to try the stairlifts and find the right one for me and the home I love. They were so friendly. The whole process was hassle-free and they offered the whole package from installation to servicing. Choose the island's first choice for stairlifts. Acorn Stairlifts, South Quay, Douglas.
Call Acorn Stairlifts now on 672 414 or call into our Douglas showroom.
What do MHKs get up to during the summer recess? What work is there for our politicians between the July Tynwald sitting and the political season opener in October? You might be surprised at how much is being done out of the immediate political gaze, and MHK's call at Glover and Smith are keen to tell us all about it. That's Perspective this Sunday at 12 on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. Grab a deck chair, don your knotted hanky and settle down to a Perspective political whippy with just the mildest sprinkle of nuts and raspberry sauce.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Well, what a gorgeous day we have today on the Isle of Man. Regarding cruise ships, says Andy, build a pier out into Douglas Bay where the cruise ships anchor parallel to the beach and connect it to, say, the promenade at the bottom of Broadway. Easy. I remember it was Peter Caron who said that they should be taking Douglas Promenade out right into the sea and build houses on the bit in between. Where's Peter Caron when you need him? And thank you, Paul. He said, I mentioned the state of the Celtic manors being missing and damaged on Wednesday on Man in Light. I'm happy to report they're all fixed and replaced last night. Well done to Douglas City Council. Well done. That's fantastic. And a simple point regarding work permits. Think local first. We don't want a scenario arising where Manx people are excluded. Well, that's it. Have a great weekend.
W-I-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-L-